Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the Matrix shit. Let's go hook him up!
Shitty and ended pretty good.
Well, at least it ended pretty good. We got our other co-host on the line, Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Oh, this and that. Just loving life.
Cool. Well, that's good to know. So, what time did you tell our guest we were going to call him, Craig?
Tell him about 5 after.
About 5 after. Okay, no problem.
Cool. All good.
So I guess we can talk about the big news that came out today, unless Couture had a moron of the week.
No. Well, I mean, the news came out today that might apply to moron of the week.
Well, that's what I was thinking at.
Well, the big news this week was Jerry Lawler. That's the biggest thing we need to talk about first.
True.
Okay. Well, we need more than 5 minutes to talk about that. We could actually talk about that with our guest, because I'm sure he knows them very well.
It's true. It's true.
But like today, I guess the big news today, and it just goes in the shake your head category, because it's just like you kind of think maybe there's a little hope for this person, and boom, they're in the news, and it's not looking too good. And that's Sonny supposedly got arrested 3 times. In a matter of days. And,
it's horrible to laugh at something like that, but it's kind of funny. You can't help it.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. I mean, that's a bit much.
Well, and she's the one getting arrested, so that means she's the one that's beating his ass.
Yeah.
He's probably asking for it.
Oh, I didn't have much hope for this relationship when she started dating some young independent worker. It's just I didn't have high hopes for that relationship when I saw it on Facebook. And apparently, it's starting to go downhill.
3 times in 3 days—that's an accomplishment right there.
You really got to be trying at that point, you know.
Gosh,
I mean, you just—that's not just an accident. That's, you know, hey. I want to get arrested.
Right. Well,
yeah.
Maybe she's still having withdrawals or something.
I would imagine, yes.
And WWE came out a little while ago and said they're still offering her help. So, you know.
That's one good thing about the WWE. I mean, they always help those guys out, and they always offer a hand. And, you can't say that about other promotions, I'll tell you that.
Well, a lot of promotions don't really have the money, so, I mean, it's not like they don't want to. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. They're really the only ones that I don't even think, like, boxing or other sports. Well, I'm sure, like, the the unions maybe have pensions and stuff like that. But as far as like wrestling, or you know, there's fine the WWE and that's it. And if they're still offering the help, I mean, she just came out of rehab. It might not be drugs. It just might be just her trying to deal with life. So she would need like some other kind of like counseling or something. And if they're willing to pay for that, I mean, that's, you know, good on them for doing that.
Hey, none of my ex-bosses would pick up my recovery. I'll tell you that right now.
Hey, this week the wellness policy is doing pretty good.
What was that, Katrina?
I said the wellness policy is doing pretty good this week.
So far, so good, yeah.
So far, so good.
Yeah. Yeah, or the Canadian healthcare system is doing pretty good. I think if I get a heart attack, I want to have a heart attack in Canada. It's not down here.
Well, that's more WWE having doctors right there being in Canada.
Yeah.
Well, I meant that they treat their patients steak, apparently.
Oh, that's true. And potatoes.
Yeah.
The butter.
I can eat a steak 3 days or 4 days after I have a heart attack, then good on me.
I just love that photo. I mean, that's just the best photo ever. Him. Days after a heart attack is eating steak, you know. That's a man with no fear right there.
I think I heard that Pat Patterson, when visit him in the hospital, gave him grief for ruining his appreciation night.
I'm going to go ahead and call our guest. So I'm still calling the cell phone number, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, just give me a couple minutes and I will be back.
Yeah. So, looking forward to that pay-per-view this weekend?
Yeah, actually I am. I thought
Really?
Even with everything involved, I thought the last segment on Monday was pretty damn good.
That was good. Looks like I'm going to probably end up missing this pay-per-view, but not because I want to, I'll say that.
I'm excited that the team of Hell No is getting a tag team title shot.
I'm actually very much looking forward to seeing that four-way. IC title.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's with Ray and Sin Cara and Cody Rhodes and
yes.
Miz. Yeah, that should be pretty good.
I think that'll be very good, and I hope it leads to something very cool.
Yeah.
What that is, I have no idea, but I would imagine their grand scheme of things is Ray and Sin Cara at Mania.
I wonder if they're going to put with Michael Cole this weekend. Maybe Josh has a plan for something.
Yeah, probably Josh.
I'd like to say bring in Jim Ross just for, you know.
Yeah, in a perfect world, that's what would happen. But who knows?
After this week, I mean, I really don't see it's going to be that long if they let him come back, you know, the king get back behind the microphone. I mean, just from what I've seen.
Yeah, if he can do well with the stress, I could see him back in a matter of weeks.
The doctors even said that he could probably go back and wrestle, which I wouldn't advise, but that's just me.
I know, that's crazy. Yeah, that is absolutely crazy. That was a surreal show on Monday night.
Yeah, but I'd give all props to Michael Cole going through with that. I don't know how he did that.
Brutal. Absolutely.
Hopefully,
brutal.
I think it might get him a little bit more respect as the voice of the company after Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Just for going through that.
Yeah, totally.
So, they shouldn't have him go back to being the obnoxious character that he's been. So.
Yeah, he seemed very human and real.
I don't watch until like an hour in now with 3 hour shows, so I can skip through a bunch of stuff. So when he came on there, it was like an hour.
Hey guys, sorry for the delay. Having some issues. He didn't answer, or he answered and then he hung up. And then when I was calling back, he called me. So just give me a couple minutes and I will have him on the air.
Okay, no problem.
Anyway, what were you saying before we so rudely interrupted?
I was saying I watched it on like an hour delay just so I can fast forward for the stuff. And so I saw what he was saying. And when he was first talking, felt like Owen Hart all over again from when I was watching that show back. And you know, I said he's fixing. I swear I thought he was going to say that he died. And
I know.
And so I just watched the rest of the show. I didn't hit the internet or anything. I didn't want to get any closer to the bad news, and I just kind of watched the rest of the show. I fast forward
right.
to the match with no commentary because there wasn't a point in watching them, really. So
yeah.
And by the end of the evening, there was a little bit better story, but still. It's good to have a tragedy in wrestling that it looks like it's going to be a tragedy, but isn't.
That's mm-hmm. right. Could you introduce our guest, please?
I'd be more than happy to do that. Our guest tonight has done just about everything there is to do in pro wrestling. And if I was to name off every title and every man that he has trained, well, we wouldn't have much time for an interview. So with that said, please welcome to the show the Doctor of Desire, Tom Pritchard.
Well, thank you very much. That's pretty nice of you to say. I'm not sure that you might have about, I don't know however long your show goes, but you might have about, 2.5 hours left anyway. But that was really nice, man. How are you guys doing this evening?
Doing well. And you?
I'm doing fantastic, man. Obviously, now, somebody's in the Pacific Northwest, and somebody's
yes,
in Texas, so there's a couple, three different time zones going on, which is pretty cool to me. Is this live, by the way?
Yes, sir.
Yes, we're actually live. We probably have, like, under 100 listeners listening live, but we do have a nice following that listen to our downloads, so.
Outstanding, man. Yeah, I've heard a lot about your show, actually. A couple guys, I think Bo James was on it last year. He talked about it. And so, great, man. I saw the plug you did today, and I really do appreciate being on. So, whatever you guys want to talk about, I'm here.
We got plenty to talk about, but I guess we should start with the big news, which is the big news of the week in wrestling, which was Jerry the King Lawler. And I'm sure that's someone you know very well. Could you give us your thoughts on the whole situation?
I wrote a blog about it, I guess, Wednesday after thinking about it. And I knew the King from Memphis, and I worked in Memphis many times in my career. So I was very familiar with the King as well as Dundee and everybody, Guy Coffey, Lance, Dave Russell, the whole Memphis crew. So I've known Jerry Lawler probably since 1982. He's one of those guys that he was a go-to guy and a main guy, a top guy, because he was the one you could count on getting anything over. So when I watched on Monday night, I happened to have a phone call about an hour into the show, and I went outside and was on my cell because I went outside to get better reception, and when I came back in, I noticed there was no commentary, which was kind of odd, and then Michael Cole came on with the on-camera and explained that King had slumped over and he was receiving CPR on the back, so it was kind of odd, it was kind of weird, but at the same time, it's one of those things. I'm sure you guys have watched long enough as well, to know when, I guess we never know who's working and who's not, but at the same time, you get this sense about this is really happening, and that's kind of how I got this sense about. And then I started getting texts from different people, and then I started texting some of the people I knew up in Montreal, and realizing it's in Canada, I knew a lot of the guys had their phones off, but some had their phones on. So the last guy I would think to have a heart attack would be Jerry Lawler. And I didn't see what happened. So I TiVo Raw every week, and I waited until the show was over, and I rewound it, and I saw him, saw the King slide into the ring. I saw the interview at the start of the show with Punk. You know, he did a little antagonistic, joust, and then I saw, when I rewound it, I saw Kofi and R-Truth against Miz and Cesaro. If you notice that on camera, you'll see the King cough and kind of just pat his chest like heartburn. And that wouldn't, if I saw it during the show and nothing happened, I wouldn't have thought twice about it. But that caught my eye knowing what was going on afterwards. Anyway, when I rewound it and watched Lawler slide in the ring and have the tag match, He sure did not look like a man who was about to have a heart attack. And then you know, later on as they did the on camera again, you know, after the match, to me there was no indication whatsoever. And I would think, you know, and I've heard rumors, and I think I read it on the internet as well. Over the weekend, he was complaining of heartburn. So, you know, that was maybe an ominous foretelling of what was about to happen. And it was one of those things where I'm watching the primetime players. Were they against R-Truth? No. Whoever they were against.
Kane and Daniel Bryan.
Oh, sorry, yeah, it was Kane and Bryan. I was watching that, and you can see in the background where Lawler slumps over and Michael's trying to help him. Well, I played that back, and I heard the mumbling. You know, I was watching for it now, and it was such a shock knowing that this 62, soon to be 63-year-old man who never smoked, never drank, never did drugs, would have a heart attack. And how ironic in Montreal on the 10th of September. I don't want to throw superstition in there because John Layfield also wrote about, you know, it doesn't want to talk about being superstitious, but they come in threes. You know, JBL's birthday is the same as Lawler's and Dutch Mantel. And we all know about the tragedy Dutch Mantel's just gone through, and now Jerry Lawler had a heart attack. Well, John's wife, Meredith, Whitney, I believe is her name. She works for Fox. She had a scare and was in the hospital in New York. So John was just kind of giving his thoughts as well. And I looked at this and kind of talked to some of the people who were there, and they said he was out for, I heard different reports, 15 to 20 minutes with no pulse. That's a long time to be out with no pulse. And immediately I thought, oh my gosh, this could be bad. This is going to be something that another thing the King just proves he's the King. And I was shocked all week reading the reports and listening to friends of mine who would say, oh man, it looks bad, it looks gruesome, but it's like. I don't want to jump to conclusions on things like that because until it's found to be true, I don't want to say, yeah, he has brain damage. My dad died on the table three times having open heart surgery, but he came back. But he had some brain damage. Oxygen, you know, it stopped flowing and he was a little off. But I saw the video of the King yesterday. He did a tout. He sounded normal. He looked normal. I didn't see any, you know, cuts on his chest like they did open heart surgery. But it was one of those things, hopefully, will be a wake-up call. I think as great a shape as the King is in and as active as he's been and continues to be at 62 years old, you're in there with Dolph Ziggler. And CM Punk, I don't think Punk did a whole lot in the match, but, you know, Lawler's throwing drop kicks. He does his fist drop. You could not tell me after seeing that match he was about to have a heart attack. There was no indication. So I'm sure everybody was just rocked who was there live, and everybody had to be, you know, well, of course they were shocked, and that was that was all the reports I got. You know, they brought him to the back. He was blue. They shocked him I don't know how many times with the defibrillator, and he finally came back. But after 20 minutes, I mean, I don't know how that's possible, but it is, and it was, and thank goodness it did. So I felt the need to write a blog about it, and I even mentioned in it, it's not like we're great buddies or best friends, but he is a colleague, and I do know him, and we have had words. We've had conversations. And over the years, since he's no longer a boss in Memphis, he's become a lot more conversational. So it's one of those things that I don't believe anyone can explain, and it's one of those things I don't think anyone wants to happen again, certainly, but only Jerry Lawler can tell you what went on during those 20 minutes that he didn't have a pulse. If he even remembers anything, and by the sound of his voice and the way he looked in this video I saw yesterday, he looked pretty good. I don't know, and I don't think anyone really knows right now the complete damage that's done to his heart. But as far as brain damage, he seems just the same guy. I don't know. It's still early. It's still early, but hopefully he'll scale back just a little bit, because I don't care how great you are, man. I really don't. He's still human, and 62, you can still do it. There's no doubt. And the reason he's doing it is because he does have that passion. He has that love for the business. I understand that, but you also have to take into consideration your own mortality, and I believe that's one reason why even Vince McMahon, you know, when he had the match with Brett, understands, I think that's the last time he needs to take that kind of stuff, because your body can only take so much. And I don't know if that's true with Lawler or not, but let's hope it is.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be all right. I mean, he looks absolutely fantastic. Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, when you were talking about, you know, the brain damage, just when it came out that, you know, he was down for like 20 minutes, I was just thinking, like, maybe he'd end up like Terry Gordy or somebody like that.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's what I think a lot of us were worried about, because, and once again, if you guys, did you know Terry by any chance personally?
No, sir.
The reason I asked that, because if you did, if you knew him before his stroke and before his problems on the plane, he was, you know, he was who he was, and he was great. And once that happened, he was never the same. And that was, I think, what we all feared was life as Jerry Lawler knew it would be over. And maybe it is, maybe it isn't. It's still way too early, but to look the way he looked in all the pictures I've seen, and to hear him speak, you know, he's going to be okay. I just don't know if he needs to continue at the schedule he was keeping. So you're right. You know, I believe we were all concerned he would wind up kind of like Terry Gordy or someone like in that case.
Not to mention his schedule. I mean, he's still working indie dates along with doing the broadcasting on Raw. And thought it almost humorous when I saw the picture today where they showed him eating dinner and he had a nice big steak in front of him just days after having a heart attack.
Well, yeah. And by the way, let me just preface this by saying you guys might have to throw a flag on me because I'm trying not to just ramble on. So you might have to like just break in. If I start going and talking for like 20 minutes straight, you're going to have to say, stop, wait. But no, I agree, because actually he had a Diet Coke. If you look there too, he had a Diet Coke.
Yeah.
And he's eating a steak, and you see the roll, and he's happy, he's got the smile. But I think that's encouraging. I really, really do. And I pray.
Right.
Well, I'm not going to say I pray, but I do. But I meditate, let's say that. That he does, that there is no damage. And there again, this is to me, it's going to sound really crazy too. But why not? It's crazy. I think this is more of a miracle than anything else, to be dead, clinically dead, let's say, with no pulse, you would call that clinically dead, for 20 minutes, and be able to speak 3 days later. So, or is it 2 days? I don't even know. Three, two, whatever. And to be eating, to walk around, and, you know, why was he able to do that? I mean, just the consequences, the eeriness of it all being just, man, we could sit here all, I could sit here all night and tell you how I thought about it. Montreal, Brett, all of a sudden the King has a heart attack at the announce table. There's medical personnel right there immediately to help him. What would have happened if this would have happened driving or in his hotel by himself? You know, just the way this whole thing was set up, there has to be a reason why the king is still here. Whatever that reason is, whatever you believe, whatever divine intervention, greater power, higher power, whatever that may be, you have to look at it. I have to look at it. I'm not going to say you. I have to look at it from, here's the king, Jerry Lawler. And I say it, he is the only guy, the only king. And that's really how I and a lot of people have addressed him, is, hey, king, I don't believe I've called him Jerry, except maybe a couple times, and that was it. But to me and a lot of people, he's a king. So there has to be a reason. This will just add to his legacy and the mythical proportions of all of everything he did in Memphis. I mean, from beating Hogan to riding down the aisle on a horse, having an empty arena match with Terry Funk. You know, all these legendary creative things, working with Andy Kaufman when nobody wanted it, and got all this publicity, slapping the living crap out of the guy on David Letterman, and now he comes back from being dead 20 minutes. That just adds to this man's legendary status, in my view. And no matter what you think of him, personally, professionally, or otherwise, you cannot deny everything he's done in this business. And it doesn't start with WWE. You look back in the 1970s, and you trace his career all the way up to now, and you cannot find anybody, maybe next to Ric Flair, with the credentials that Jerry Lawler has. And I only say Flair because I heard Flair say something the other day. There's no 40-year-old pros anymore, guys who've been in business 40 years, that still get in the ring and understand how to tell a story, have psychology, and make it interesting, and make it real. And that's what Jerry Lawler liked to do in Memphis. As hokey as it was, there were elements Lawler would put in to make it real. I mean, would you want to stand there and get hit by a car? I wouldn't. I don't care who's driving. But he did. But God, he did. And he did it because, that's what he did. You know, Kaufman and Lawler, they kayfabed everybody. They smartened up who they needed to, and that just the bare minimum. So that doesn't happen on a basis anymore. It happens occasionally, but that's to me, that is the biggest element missing in this business today, is the mystery and the realism. And if you want something to get over, Jerry Lawler, Jerry the King Lawler, is the guy to do it. And he still is at 62 years old. My gosh, if you watch that match back, he really did. He does work better than half the roster. But that's because he knows. And that's because he's been there. So,
while we're on that subject, you were up here in my neck of the woods a couple years ago doing a seminar for Cecil.
Yes.
Okay. I got to sit in on that, and why don't you talk a little bit about what you're trying to teach new guys coming up now?
Well, that's the thing. The hardest thing to teach new guys coming up now, and was the hardest thing then. That was how many years ago? Do you remember exactly? I remember doing it.
Probably three, maybe four.
No, it's longer than three or four, because I've been in Tampa for 5 years. So it's been at least six, maybe six. But the same thing then is going on now. Is everyone watches Raw and SmackDown, and then they try to imitate what goes on Raw and SmackDown with no understanding of why that's happening on a TV show, Raw and SmackDown. Pardon me. Raw and SmackDown are TV shows. They're not live wrestling events. Although they are live wrestling events, they're TV shows filmed in front of a live crowd.
Right.
And major crowds, major arenas, I mean. And you have to understand the psychology, the timing, the feeling. Some of the things that those guys do on Raw and SmackDown aren't correct. They're not always right, and they get told about it when they come to the back. They try, and some of the things they do make no sense at all, but that's by design sometimes, and sometimes it's just because they don't know. Nobody really understands what telling a story means. No one understands that, in my opinion, you have to have at one time in your life had to believe what you were watching in the ring was real. You had to have that feeling as a fan. Just this is just my opinion. If you were sitting in the crowd and you watched someone and you said, whoa, that wasn't supposed to happen. That was real. Or those guys are really knocking the living hell out of each other. And at the same time, you felt that. Now everybody watches it and it's been exposed as, well, we're just a TV show. We're PG-13. It's all entertainment. Well, you can't. Yes, it is all entertainment. It was always entertainment. Even when Lou Thesz, look him up, guys. Even not you guys, but anybody listening. But Lou, even when Lou Thesz was champion, it was entertainment. But Lou Thesz, back in those days, in the early days of the business, there was that mystery, that aura. Even though people knew and said, "Oh, it's fake and it's phony," and well, you had the real guys who could, and they proved it. And they had policemen. And they had people who would go out and put on matches to convince people. I would watch stuff in Texas where Terry Funk Sr. and Mike DiBiase would hardway each other. And Terry Funk would hardway Dick Murdoch, and vice versa. You know, those were the kind of guys that I grew up watching and believing. Of course, it was entertainment. But the fact that those guys were insane enough or crazy enough, or let me use the word I like to use, passionate enough about their business and sport, to go ahead and give the public, give the fans who came and paid their money enough to say, wow, let's give them something extra tonight. I'm going to hit you in the eye. Okay? You got it, man. Now, if any rational, sane person is going to say, I'm not going to let you hit me in the eye. Come on, man. No, that's what you did, and that's what's missing today. I'm not saying we need hard rays. I'm not saying we need blood. I'm not saying we need – I'm just saying – how about a little more realism? How about a little more not telling everybody our secrets? The internet doesn't help, but at the same time, it's a necessary evil. It's part of technology. We're not going to go backwards. We have to go forwards. And I do understand that. I really got to tell you, I detest the social media, the Twitter, the Facebook, what else? Oh, the blogs. But I found out I had to do it once I got an interruption of service, a.k.a. fired, I understood the only way to get your name out there is to do those things. And that is the same thing these young guys don't understand. They don't understand that you didn't always have the social media to go to. You couldn't always put your matches on YouTube, which is good and bad, because you think something's great and you put it on YouTube and somebody sees it and they knock it, and then you don't like that, so your feelings get hurt, and then you leave comments after my blog, and oh, my God, man, it's great. But the thing is, the same thing that was kind of told Cecil's guys, I think, was don't tell everybody your business. Put some doubt in there, man. Go out there. Give these people that pay to see you guys on the independent level. Anyone who comes to an independent show is there to watch wrestling and be entertained, because the WWE charges so much. You're going to watch a rock show. You're going to watch an event. If you're going to go see an independent wrestling show, you're going to go see wrestling. That, at least that's what you're hoping to see. That's what I would hope to see if I'm going to go watch independent wrestling. But too many of the independent wrestling shows I see are guys trying to imitate WWE, and they don't understand why they're doing the moves. They just go out and do a bunch of moves with no rhyme or reason, go from one spot to one move and one body part to the other body part with no rhyme or reason. Example, I don't know, man, I don't know if you guys have read my blog. Let me just say, go to drtompritchard.com, drtompritchard, no T in Pritchard.com. And I talk about the bogus wrestling schools because I was irate. I had we had. I did a camp for Bo James in Waynesville, North Carolina, but the night before was in Kingsport, and a 6'4", 295-pound guy wrestled a 5'7", 175-pound guy, and within the first 3 minutes of the match, this big guy powerbombs this kid, covers him, and the kid kicks out on two. Now, tell me that just didn't kill your what you're doing. He was giving him all these big moves. The kid was kicking out, but then he'd go grab a hold, and then he'd out-wrestle this kid. It made no sense. And then he got beat. He got beat with, like, a small schoolboy. He got beat with a schoolboy. And it just didn't make any sense. And this guy had 18 years, he said. He'd been in the business. You got me right, 18 years. And I said, why haven't you ever tried to go to any organizations? And he said he had. He had some tryouts with WCW, and Al Snow had trained him, which is, again, a wrong thing to say to me because I know Al. And then I investigated and found out why he didn't get a shot. I mean, well, he got tryouts, but why he didn't get picked up, I kind of understood more as the weekend went along. But once I got back and I investigated because I wanted to make sure I knew what I was talking about before I wrote the blog, and I have facts on my side. So anyway, to make a long story even longer, what I was trying to tell the young guys, and I'm going to try to tell the guys today, watch some of the older stuff, not because I'm telling you to have that style of match, but watch how the storytelling is told. You can't do that on TV because you have time constraints. Maybe now with 3 hours, they'll be able to have longer matches. I don't know. But the fact is, there's only one CM Punk. There's only one Paul Heyman. There's only one Triple H, only one Shawn Michaels. Don't try and copy them. Be the next you. And that's what's missing is originality is overrated. Yes, at the same time, you steal from here, steal from there, and then you make it your own. You know, I'm sure you guys know the story, Dallas Page giving Orton his finish because he wasn't going to use it much longer. So here, Randy, what a great finish for you. And that's the way things go. Handed down. And that's why it is so valuable to have a guy like Jerry Lawler there, because you cannot teach experience. You can help someone if you have experience, but you can't teach experience. You have to get that on your own. And that's why the business, in my opinion, is suffering a bit today. I say suffering on the independent level and on Raw and SmackDown. It's yeah, absolutely. You do have some really good young talent in the developmental system that I know of before I left. But you have to take into account that what you do in the ring is maybe 10% of what really matters. I don't want to say politics is rampant, but politics is a big part of life, and you have to accept that. If you don't play the game and you don't understand how to get over with the people who make decisions, guess what? There's people who do, and there's people who will, and this is the entertainment business, and you have to be smart enough to understand how to manipulate and get yourself where you want to be. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it's pleasant. I'm not saying it's even right. I'm just saying it's the way it is. And young guys today think it's easy because they watch it on TV and say, I can do that. Oh, hell, I can do that. It's easy. They don't understand what goes into putting everything together and making sense of it. I can't guarantee anything because I don't know, but I will bet you that the tag match with Lawler and Dolph and Punk and Orton, they called the majority of that in the ring. That was not a rehearse, let's go over every spot by spot. And that's what's missing. You have to have feeling. You have to know. You have to listen. And nobody knows how to teach that. And the only way you learn that, in my opinion, again, is being in there with someone who knows more than you, been in there longer than you, and that's the way it was taught before. And now you have young guys leading young guys, and hopefully the agents or / producers in the back can kind of help you lay it out, but they can't go out and do the match for you. They can give you their vision, and give you some ideas, but then you have to go out and paint that picture. You know, the canvas literally is your canvas. You create the art that goes on. And that, I think that's what I told the guys at Cecil's. It's pretty much what I tell everybody. Bring some realism to it. Bring some mystery to it. Don't let everybody in on what you're doing. And even the boys sometimes, you know, shock them. If you can get the boys, I mean, that's even better. I mean, don't tell everybody what you're doing. So that was my, I believe that, because that's usually what I say in my camps. I might could be wrong because I have a lot of brain damage myself. And I haven't had a heart attack yet. My brother and the king have, but I haven't.
I wanted to ask you about if you could talk about some of your early memories working for Judo Gene LaBelle and teaming with Chris Adams.
Well, you know, I really talked to Gene a couple times when I was in L.A. in 1980, but I worked for Mike. Gene was an announcer by then, and I talked to him just maybe three times because he was not around that much. I don't believe he and Mike got along. But for me, the Olympic Auditorium was always known as the Madison Square Garden, the West Coast, in the wrestling magazines. You know, Bill Apter's wrestling magazines would say the Olympic Auditorium from Los Angeles, you know, the Madison Square Garden of the West Coast. So to go to L.A. was pretty exciting for me. It was a trip, actually. To finally get there, and I was originally going to Oregon, but I got Gary Hart put me in L.A. and Paul Bosch put me in Oregon, and I thought they both had it coordinated. And once I got there in L.A., Chavo Guerrero was a booker, and I said, "Chavo, when do I go to Oregon?" He goes, "No, man, you're staying here." I thought, okay, well, I didn't realize then. I realize now. You know, I was staying there because I was 20 years old, and I was cheap talent. They could pay me what they wanted to pay me, give me a belt, and I'd be happy. And they were right. I was getting experience, but I was wrestling in the Olympic Auditorium. I was living in Van Nuys. It was the coolest building. It was the coolest place, and I teamed with Alvin Thrill first. Then Chris Adams came from England with his wife, Jeannie. And they put Chris and I together, and Chris was a really good guy. I had a lot of fun with him, but he was one of those guys that if you let him drink or indulge a little too much, he wasn't a happy kind of indulger. He was one of those guys that you had to watch and keep your eye on, because I remember I was driving one time, and he's blowing smoke in Victor Rivera's face, and Victor didn't want smoke blowing in his face. He says, "Don't do that to me again." And Chris, being Chris, started to do it again, and Victor said, "I told you, mother, I don't do that again." And then Chris backed off, because Victor was hot, and you knew it. So, but I never had problems with Chris. I knew his kind of guy. I mean, I knew that kind of guy when I'd been around him before. When I indulged, I like to have a good time and lay back. I don't like to fight and get in arguments. I want to relax. Well, I did. I can't indulge anymore. I'm a recovering indulger. But anything you put in front of me back then, woof. I think that was a business. But anyway, asking about Chris, he was what he was. He was fun to be around. He could be charming. He could be the nicest guy in the world. But as with a lot of people with alcohol problems, it changes. Then it changes his personality. So other than that, I didn't see him past California. He went to Texas and teamed with Gino, and once Gino and Chris were together as a tag team, I can only imagine the nights they had and days. So, yeah. I mean, yeah. I could probably tell you, but I'd be speculating and just romanticizing about it. But I think you guys can probably guess just as well.
Couture, go ahead, Couture.
What are your memories of working with Brad Armstrong? He's always one of my favorite performers.
Brad Armstrong is one of my favorite people and one of my favorite opponents of all time because I never, not one time, and I said this recently, anytime I stepped in the ring with any of the Armstrongs, it was a night off. But Brad and I just had this chemistry, I thought, and I think, yeah, I'm pretty sure he would say the same thing. I'll bet on it, but he's one of my favorite people, one of my best friends in the business, and I talk to him almost weekly. He's one of the handful of people that I'll talk to and don't have to say anything at all. It's just one of those calls where I say, hey, Brad, just want to see how your day's going, hello. I know you got stuff going on, but hear your voice. That's all I need, man. And in the same way, it was just call, say, didn't have anything to say all day to say it. But working with Brad was, you didn't have to talk about anything. You just went out, and that's what I'm saying, is that you went out and felt it. And we were both green as grass, man. Even in Atlanta, I worked with him. And then in Alabama, in fact, I'm working with him in October in Alabama. Gosh, I don't want to wrestle anymore, but they're pulling me back in, and the only reason I'm doing it is because it's Brad and Tim Horner. And we're doing this show in Pell City on October, I think it's the 27th. But, you know, Brad is just one of those guys that you didn't have to tell or do. He just felt that he was there, there's timing and there's feeling. And there's that passion and that inevitable it factor that no matter who he stepped in the ring with, everybody that I've ever heard said the same thing. Plus, if he just, you know, he was the greatest guy backstage. You know how Road Dogg was Brad on stage. And they're all like that. All the Armstrongs were insane. And I mean that in a great way. They were funny. They were entertaining. They were just the most wittiest, from Bob all the way down to Steve, Scott, Brad, Brian. Brian was the most entertaining one of them all. They got the opportunity in WWE to perform the way he was backstage. What you saw on screen with the Road Dogg is exactly how he is, man. He's calmed down a lot more, and they were all like that. And it made it for a fun night. It made it for a great night to walk into the ring against a guy like Brad Armstrong, who you didn't have to discuss every move you're going to make. All you had to do is say, this is what we're doing at the end, and that's it. Cool. How do we get there? We'll figure it out when we get out there. That's it.
I was gonna say, like, with Brad kind of had, and he was like the NWA version of Tito Santana, as he was there to make all these other guys look good. How did Brad feel that he was put in that position where he had the talent to be a star, but they kind of put him in that position where he had to make other people stars? Did he feel like he was being held back? How did he feel about that?
You know, that's funny. It's even funny you should say that, because it's one of those things that I said earlier. You know, what you do in the ring is really 10% of what makes a difference in this business. And Brad is one of those guys. Once he got back to the dressing room, he could have a good time. He got along with people, and he could mix with anybody's clique. And he was just accepted everywhere. But at the same time, you have to understand that you have to go to, for lack of a better term, let's say the booker, and you have to make it known that you got ideas and you have aspirations to do this. Okay, they booked Brad when he came to Alabama or Pensacola. When Flair would come, the world champion would come, Brad would get at least a match or two, because they knew Brad would have a great match. Okay, Brad just worried about wrestling. Brad didn't want to play any politics. Brad wouldn't walk on somebody to get over to do something. Brad just, it's not in him. I mean, maybe it's in him, but it's not. And, I mean, I've never seen it, and I asked him about that. Like I said, it's funny you said that, because I asked him maybe, God, a month ago or 2 months ago, just recently. I said, man, did you ever feel the urge to just stab somebody in the back and just say, screw it, man, I'm going to go for it? Because if he did, he would have, but he never did. And he said, no, man, I just wanted to wrestle. That was all I wanted to do. And he did. And I think, especially at his time, his age, at his career, for the NWA, when he was just being used the way he's being used, I think he was happy to have a job, and I think he was happy to be working. I believe, yeah, I believe like you, he could have been a much bigger star, but he was very, when it came to pushing for himself, he was a little laid back. And on promos, they weren't his strongest point, whereas Brian just didn't care. Brian, you know, Road Dogg, had been a Desert Storm. He'd been in the Marines. He'd seen a lot more stuff than you and I will see in our lifetime. He didn't care. And he made it known he didn't care. He just went out with him. He was didn't care. But Brad, I think, had a lot of, I don't know. I'm not going to say he did have ambition. There's no doubt about it. But at the same time, I don't think he was willing or wanting to make it known that, hey, he's going to step on somebody to get over somebody. You know, he was going to be the guy to agreeable and go out there, and you know you can always count on this guy to have a great match. Make waves? Nah, it's not his thing, man. He just wants to come in, have a good time, do his job, and go home. And a lot of guys, I think there are a few guys like that. And, I think that was the case with Brad. I think he's okay with where he was at. I think he's okay where he's at now. That's why, he doesn't want to wrestle either. But I called him up when this guy asked me about the Alabama thing, and he said, yeah, man, I'm going to do it just because it's you and Horner and Mike Taylor. So, I don't think he has any regrets. He may, but then again, too few to mention.
Go ahead, Craig.
Your biggest break was probably wrestling for Jim Cornette in Smoky Mountain. You talk a little bit about your great feud with the Rock and Roll Express.
Okay. I think I had a great time in Smoky Mountain. I think, Continental Wrestling in Alabama was kind of a breakout point for me, too, because I got more comfortable being a heel in Alabama. But with Cornette in Smoky Mountain, getting the break working with Rock and Roll, it was kind of already past the Midnight Express deal, and it was redoing the same thing with just different guys, which is great. Don't get me wrong, because I had a blast, man, working with Stan, Jim, and then with Ricky and Robert. But it was one of those things where, while it was fun doing what we were doing and working with the Rock and Roll Express, it was also that starting to really change in the business to where it didn't look good for a territory like that to last. You know, old school wrestling, it was like wrestling the way you like it or something like that. I think it was wrestling the way it used to be, the way you like it, was the tagline. And in reality, it was, but it wasn't, because if it was, people would have come to see it. But obviously, they didn't in the end. You know, in the beginning, we had some good houses, but in the end, it was, no, man. So we got the break, and everybody thinks it was a great thing to go to WWE, and it was. It was a great opportunity. But here's the deal. I came in and started with Jim and Stan. And originally, I don't know if you guys know the story or not, but Jim said when Dennis left, he wanted me to come in and be Bobby's partner, but he couldn't get a hold of me. And anyway, it wound up being Stan. So now we have this trio. He has a tag team he wants, and we're working. Well, Stan, we're not making a lot of money in Smoky Mountain, but we're having a lot of fun. Well, Stan's not having that much fun, and he's not making that much money, so he decides, it's time to give it up. And we're looking for a partner now. Now, again, this is during a time in the business where things are really starting to change, like about 1993. And it's getting harder and harder to find somebody to mesh, and somebody who's not tied down with either WCW or WWE. Well, Kevin Sullivan recommends Jimmy Backlund. And I knew Jimmy a little bit, but not really. I'd met him a couple times through the years. But anyway, Jimmy came in right after Stan quit. We did, I think, Fall Brawl, Super Brawl or something in Johnson City. And then WWE called us to do SummerSlam in 93. And Jimmy was my partner then. But we were just getting to know each other. And going to WWE, like I said, it was a blessing and a curse because we're a Southern tag team and a package of, you know, the Heavenly Bodies with Jim Cornette versus the Rock and Roll Express might get over in, you know, Tennessee or North Carolina, but I think it was Survivor Series in Boston. They ate us alive. We're doing all these Southern spots and Southern wrestling, and they could give two craps about it, you know. So it was a great break. It was a great opportunity to work with Jim, and it was a great opportunity to work with Stan and Jimmy. But honestly, it was, you know, it was a lot of, you know, we thought we were going out. I'd been working like 13 years by that time and finally go to WWE. And we have a match one time on TV that I thought was pretty good. And I get called, Jimmy Del Rey and I get called over by an official who says, hey, somebody wants to talk to you about the match. And another official, I won't name names here because it's necessary, but he just proceeds to tear us a new asshole because we didn't know what the hell we were doing. And I'm looking at him and I'm thinking, wait a minute. You know, it's all subjective, or, you know, it's not your opinion. It's great, but I'm not so sure that's, you know, there was something else going on, I think. And from there, it just kept going downhill because I wasn't very assertive either. I was just kind of happy to be there. And if you want to make it in this business, you need to be assertive. You need to stand up and you need to say something. And even then, sometimes I would get you heat. No, a lot of times, most of the time I would get you heat, but, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the oil too. So, it was great, but at the same time, there were hurdles we had to go over, and we went over a couple, but then again, you know, it happens, and it happened. So that's the way it ended up, man. It just ended up with them calling us into Louisville when Louisville Gardens called us in the dressing room saying, listen, Cornette really needs you guys in Smoky Mountain, so, you know, we're going to kind of take you back off the road here and go back to Smoky Mountain, which is a nice way to say you're fired, you're going back to Smoky Mountain. So, and I knew that wasn't going to last either. But anyway,
thoughts on this, on the SummerSlam match with the Steiner brothers? How did you feel about that match?
No, I thought that was a great match, and I didn't really know the Steiners that well, but I had heard that, you know, Scott could be moody, Rick could be moody, and so I'm trying to tell people that, look, man, I don't want to go on this pay-per-view. We had just done a Super Brawl with the Rock and Roll Express the month before, so I didn't really want to go to SummerSlam and not know what we were getting into. Well, they were great guys. The Steiners were great to work with. They had no problems. I had no problems with them at all. And I thought that was a really good match. And, you know, that was great. But once again, you have to be active in your own career. You can't just expect people to want to book you and put you in position. It doesn't happen that way. And that's kind of the way I was playing it. And Jimmy was playing the same way. They wanted Cornette, and that's my true feeling. Was the only reason they brought us up there was because they wanted Jimmy to be the manager for Yokozuna, which exactly what happened. And we kind of got pushed aside, which was, again, my fault, Jimmy's fault, all of our fault, because nobody spoke up and said, hey, we have an idea, let us work with whoever else is up there as a team. Well, we worked with Smoking Gun some. We worked with whoever was the tag teams at the time, but I don't think the tag team situation was any stronger than it is now. And that could be bad. But anyway, that was a good match. We had some spinoffs from that in Smoky Mountain. You know, we have brought the Steiners down. They brought their dog in. You know, we got some mileage out of that. Jimmy was trying to get them to drop the tag titles to us for about a week and let us drop it back to them in Tennessee, but come to find out, they were dropping them to the Mounties or whoever it might be. So that didn't happen either. But once again, once you learn this, the way things work in the office, you kind of scratch your head and go, oh, now I get it. That's why that happened. So.
Now, sometime later, you did make a return to the WWE as Chris Candido's partner in the Body Donnas, along with Sonny. What were your thoughts on that tag team? And as somebody who just recently cut off his mullet, how did you feel about cutting off yours?
I was really – what happened – man. What happened was Smoky Mountain went out of business, and – I actually called and said, look, if there's any way or anything open for a job, I'll do anything. Okay, about a five-minute interval goes by, and I get a call back saying, hey, how'd you like to cut your hair off and a crew cut that I blonde be Skip's partner? And I said, no, I don't think so. I said, oh, okay, bye. I went, whoa, wait a minute. Maybe I would. So I called him back and said, you know, okay. And I still, even when I said it, I thought, man, I'll get out of this some way. Well, that was when they were using, you know, Rad Radford and doing the gimmick and everything else and trying to fit me in, which, now, you know, I understand now. But I was in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and they took me to cut my hair. And I was just, it was like my hair was my flag. My hair was my shield. It was, you know, I had it for so long, and it was just easy to hide behind. It was like Linus's blanket, you know, and I got it cut off. They filmed it, you know, for their own personal amusement. And I felt naked, and I felt really uncomfortable, and I never embraced the gimmick. I loved Chris Candido. He was such a great person. I mean, I still get emotional when I think about it, but Sonny was Sonny, and I didn't appreciate what was going on. I didn't appreciate the way she would talk to Chris in front of everybody, and I was a part of that, and it was really uncomfortable and not a good time. Even winning the titles, man, it was WrestleMania 12. Oh, wait a minute. It was WrestleMania 12 free-for-all. We're not even on the friggin' tape or DVD, whatever it is. And, you know, that's fine. That's great. But at the same time, you know, you're throwing us a bone, but really you're not. And I was really appreciative, but at the same time, there was a lot of animosity, I think, going on. Sonny wasn't helping things, and the way business was being ran back then was the way it was being ran, and by who. And that's cool. I didn't press it. I was just happy to have a job. But talking about standing up, you know, I'll never forget this when Vince actually called us in his office in Madison Square Garden. I'm dropping that one because I remember it so well. And he wants to take Sonny off away from us and put us with a transvestite and make us baby faces. What a brilliant idea. You take the hot chick away from us. And then you put us with a guy dressed up like a girl. Yeah, I'll cheer for that team.
Sure.
No. And Candido said, yeah. Candido said, that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard. I'm going, oh, no, man. I didn't want to lose my job, but I was in a different place in my life, too. And it didn't work. It bombed, like, big time. And it just, I never felt it, man. Like I said, I love Chris, and I appreciated him. And I loved his enthusiasm, his passion, but I hated the gimmick. It wasn't me. I hated having my hair that short. I hated dyeing it blonde. It just was it was a dark period in my life. I was going through a lot of issues, had a lot of issues, and I think Chris was too, but Tammy was too. And so, I mean, I can't blame anyone but myself, and I don't blame anyone but myself. So I was happy to be there. At the same time, I dreaded it going to the arena.
Katrina, go ahead.
Now, what were your thoughts when you first saw your brother Bruce in just his brother Love, when you first saw that gimmick?
Actually, I thought it was kind of cool, just knowing Bruce, because that's Bruce. Very loud, and I guess gregarious is a word I could use. Just, I don't even know what that means. It just sounds like him. But just outgoing, obnoxious kind of guy. And that was him. He brought it to life, and he turned the volume up. But he didn't need to turn it up that much, because he was already at that volume, man. He was pretty loud as it was. So when I first saw it, I thought, yeah, this is pretty good. This is him. And, you know, I loved the gimmick. I thought it was it was one of those things that you really looked at him, and if you listened to him, and you're going, oh, man, I'd like to kick this guy right in the face. So, you know, I thought it was great. I was happy for him because he always wanted to perform. He always wanted to be on camera, and he was. And now he was not just performing and on camera. He was performing and on camera with the top guys. And, again, that was tremendous for him. Plus he was in the office. And he was working very close with Vince. So, you know, I couldn't be happier for him. And at the same time, there was always that sibling rivalry. I never anticipated going to WWF at that time. I was always going to just stay in the South, be content working for whoever I could work for. And it just by chance fell in my lap, and then by chance, things happen the way they happen. So Bruce was there longer than I was. He was there in a much larger capacity than I ever was. But I was really happy that he got to be in front of the camera. He got to do his thing. And, you know, we're all performers, and we all want to perform. So when you get that chance, you make the best of it. And, man, he did. He made the best of it. So I thought it was great. Very good.
Go ahead, Craig.
Up until just early this year, you were working with FCW. Is there anybody that's down there right now that we should keep our eye on?
Well, yeah, actually. And here's the thing. So I haven't been around since May 30th, but you know, I know Seth Rollins is still here. He's the NXT champion. You have Dean Ambrose, who I don't know what they're doing with him. Yeah, I mean, really, it's incredible. They had incredible matches. Yep. Anybody Roth Seth steps in the ring with is incredible. And let's see. Man, I'm trying to think of the roster right now. Dolph Ziggler's brother, Bobby Pierce, is young. He's green, but he once he settles down, he'll be okay. Riley Pierce, another one. I think Damian Sandow has already made his debut on Raw, and obviously yes. Cesaro's a U.S. champion, but he's been working for forever anyway, so we can't take credit for him. But I'm trying to think. Joe Rude is, I can't think of his working name, but he's a huge guy, bald head, beard, looks like Barbarian, and I can't, honestly, I'm drawing a blank right now on the roster, but Ambrose, Seth Rollins, wow, how about that?
Did you put Chris Hero? Would you put Chris Hero in there? I can't remember his
name. That's a good name to bring up because when I saw Chris Hero, and I knew about Chris through someone who worked with him before, And I watched, and, you know, I watched Claudio when he came in. I knew they were partners. At the same time, I heard so much about Chris Hero. Well, he got here, and it's almost, not that he, I haven't seen him in a while, so I don't know, but he was almost too smooth. It was almost like he was going through a routine as opposed to when Claudio hit you and Claudio had a match, you knew it was a competitive match. He wasn't just going through a routine. And that's the way I felt. Now, not to say that Hero doesn't have talent, because he does.
Mm-hmm.
It's just when I watched him, I didn't see what everybody else was raving about. And I actually told him that. And I told this other person that too. But once again, you have to prove to the decision makers that your way is the right way. And you have to get them to see what you're doing is what they want you to do. In other words, you got to play by your rules, but look like you're playing by theirs. And that's the manipulation part. And Chris, from my dealings with him, wasn't that great of a politician at the time that I was getting to know him, because there were guys that were coming in as trainers and coaches who you definitely had to get on your side. And he was one of those guys who doesn't necessarily like to say, yes, sir, you're right. And a lot of times, believe it or not, in the corporate world, you have to say, yes, sir, you're right, even when, no, sir, you're not, really is the right answer.
Right.
So, yeah, and I don't say that kind of flippantly. I just say that because you try and it's easy to say yes. It's hard to say no. And once you say no to somebody who doesn't want to hear no and they're in a power position, yeah, you might as well pack your bags. So, and I've just seen it happen quite a few times, and that's, I'm only drawing from my own experiences as well. But Hero, he's got talent. He just, to me, he was too smooth. And if he's lost that edge, I mean, lost that smoothness and got a little rougher and edgier, then more power to him. I like the guy, but I can't, and I'm just trying to think of who else. Oh, James Bronson, another guy that I thought has a lot of talent. Man. But I can't.
Dr. Tom, I wanted to ask you a question. Well, actually, like a listener from Ireland wanted me to ask this question. And with the exception of the guys like Seth Rollins, Hero, Claudio, the guys who have been working for quite a while, it seems like a lot of criticism on a lot of audio shows, a lot of criticism out of the guys coming from SCW is the fact that a lot of them don't even run the ropes right. And I was wondering if I could just get a response on what you thought about that, if they're bringing guys up too early, or, you know, what's your thought on that criticism that I've heard on quite a lot of other audio shows?
That's a great point. That's an excellent point. I think that has to do with once they leave here, once they leave FCW and you get into WWE, or you get brought on the road, you're in a whole different atmosphere. And you're really going into a whole different stratosphere, if you want to get to go that far. Because the way I was taught to hit the ropes is sideways with your arm over the top and run, and you have to learn how to do it. Well, when you get on the road and you're nervous and you're green, you don't have a chance to get seasoned. They want to bring you up right now. Mason Ryan's a perfect example. Where's he been? So they don't have an opportunity to make the errors down here long enough to fix before they go up. And, yes, they've called up talent way too soon, but it's by necessity because they need new talent. And the problem is there's not anywhere to get them seasoned and then put them up. They need them now. If you look, the talent pool is pretty thin. I mean, it's pretty shallow. And, yeah, if they can't hit the ropes right, I understand. But then you still left him down here. And I don't want to knock the guy or get on him, but Sin Cara showed up a couple days, and here's a superstar from Mexico, and he goes, and how many moves can he screw up in one match? He only knows maybe three. I don't know. I'm just saying. He was one of those guys that should have been in FCW for a while. But yet, since he worked in Mexico all these years and he's this big Mexican superstar, you're going to put him out there right away. Right or wrong, you're going to get what you're going to get when you do that with someone like that, because he didn't know English. He had to rely on someone in the ring that could relay messages to him, which they did, which is fine. But, you know, you get a one-trick pony and you've seen that one trick. Then what? And I think they're finding out right now, then what? You're right. I mean, some of the guys that they pull up are pulled up way too soon. I mean, it's just, it's not their fault. Mason Ryan should be a superstar. Mason Ryan, in my opinion, he has everything in the world going for him except understanding what he needs to do backstage, what he needs to do when he gets there, how he needs to act, talk, where he needs to go. Example, Titus O'Neil. Titus O'Neil stunk on ice when he got here. Horrible. But I'm going to give credit where credit's due, because Titus O'Neil busted his ass, got better. He's still not there, but he's getting there. And he has confidence, and he knows how to play the game. He's a self-made man. He grew up in the Sheriff's Boys Ranch, so he's had a tough life, but he made something out of himself, and he refuses to be held down. He refuses to take all the knocks, you know, when he says, you know, make it a win and all that stuff. Everybody made fun of him, but you remembered it, and he may not be the greatest technical wrestler ever, but at the same time, he was on Raw. He's in a tag team right now. He has a look, and he does want to learn. I cannot fault him for wanting to learn. If he would show up and he would stay late, and he would do everything he needed to do to get better, and he continues to seek out help. He's not where he needs to be yet. But a guy like that who refuses to quit and asks for help all the time makes an impression. And he's not afraid. He has no fear. So those are elements that you can't teach. Those are elements you need to have. But not everybody knows where to, how to get that, why you should have it, or what to do with it once you have it. So Titus was pulled up way too soon. But at the same time, once he got there, he found fit. He found Malenko. He found whoever was willing to show him something. He was the first one at the ring. The last one to get out of the ring. I mean, people made fun of him. Look at Titus. He's in the ring trying to show off. No, he was in the ring because he wanted to learn. And that's where you have to make the difference, you know, between jealousy and envy and all the stuff that goes along in this business. People aren't going to like you if you succeed. So, well, a lot of people won't. Let's say that.
Well, Dr. Tom, you've been with us for quite a while, so I'd like to get, like, we could ask just one more question each, and then we'll go ahead and let you get back to your night. So, Couture, go ahead.
Yeah, in 1988, I finally got to see some Continental Wrestling when Eddie Guerrero was a booker. What do you think about him as a performer and a booker at that time?
As a performer, I thought Eddie was fantastic, and as a booker, he had an idea, and he had a vision. And it was he and Paul Dangerously, you know, Paulie at the time, together. And I thought Eddie had a pretty good outline of what he wanted to do. So he had a plan, and that was good. At the same time, you have to have people that you can count on to carry out your plan. And it was at the time, the Fullers had sold it to David Woods, who didn't really know anything about wrestling. He knew TV, but he didn't know wrestling. And a lot of stuff that he wanted to do, I think David probably said no. And you have to have people who are on board with your vision. And but I thought he had a great vision. I thought he had a great run as a performer. It just, you know, there comes a time when you butt heads with the guy who has the money so many times, or you're not really seeing him follow through with his part of the bargain, and yet you finally throw up your head and hands and say, look, it's time for me to move on. And I think that's what happened with Eddie.
Craig, go ahead, Craig.
I'm just going to use my my last question as to this. If you are looking for any more information on Dr. Tom Pritchard, you can check his website out at drtompritchard.com, drtompritchard.com. And Dr. Tom, do you have anything upcoming? Do you have any shows, any clinics or anything like that coming?
Oh, man, yeah, actually in October, I just, I'm not near a computer right now, so, but I do know in October, I believe, I want to say, it's under my appearances, man, I'm going to,
I'm pulling it up right now, Doctor.
Pat Buck's, school in, I think it's October 12th and 13th. It's a Friday and a Saturday. One is a show, one is an autograph signing. And then October 27th, I know it's Bell City, Alabama, against Brad Armstrong and Tim Horner, me, and Micah Taylor in a tag match. But other than that, you can check the website. It's under appearances. I really don't, again, I don't have any anything in front of me, and I'm kind of brain dead myself right now. So, anyway, I really do appreciate it, guys. Thank you for letting me come on, because I'm still a fan of professional wrestling. I'm still a fan of people who want to do wrestling and be a part of it. And I appreciate just the opportunity to listen to everybody else talk about it and their feelings on today's product as well as yesterday's product. So, yeah, please check out drtompritchard.com. There's drtompritchard.com and a lot of stuff on there, man, that hopefully you guys will like.
That's the problem. I did have one last question myself, and that is, when you were at the WWE, one of your jobs was actually co-hosting a Bike This on WWE.com, and I didn't hear the show a lot, but I heard this one particular show that I would think nowadays everybody who was on the show probably would have been fired right after the show aired. And this is a show with you and the Right to Censor, and basically it was you and the Godfather talking about smoking pot for about half an hour.
You know what? It probably was, but I don't remember it because I was probably smoking pot. Maybe we were, yeah, we could have, but that was back then, you know, and that's kind of what we did. Yeah, I mean, I can't deny it. We did it, and that was a business, you know. It was pretty much... You smoke a big fatty before, after, and sometimes during. So, yeah, it was great. But, yeah, we would have got fired then. I mean, we would have got fired now, but back then it was a little bit different.
Yeah. So I just remember I listened to that, and it was one of the funniest things that I had ever heard. It was one of those just things that it's amazing that it happened, but I'm glad it did, because it was, like I say, it was probably the most entertaining Bike This that they had put out.
Well, let me just say real quick, and I know you guys have to go, but really, really, really quick, man. You know, the business has changed so much, and it's changed for the better and the worse all at the same time. The better is there is a wellness policy now to take care of the guys. You know, we have doctors there, and thank God they were for the King last week. And but, you know, at the same time, sometimes going down the road smoking a joint wasn't so bad because you got creative and you talked about things that maybe you wouldn't talk about if you hadn't. So there you have it in a nutshell. We couldn't do that today. They even canceled the show. So with all the social media, you would think it would have something else to do with Joey Styles, I believe. But be that as it may, no more smoking pot, no more doing drugs. How about that? Just say no. Yeah, that works. Yeah, tell them that expression. Just cheer up.
Yeah. Sure. Well, Dr. Tom, we very much appreciate you taking all the time that you spent with us tonight. We really appreciate it, and we want to wish you the absolute best.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you guys very much. I wish you guys the best, too. Maybe we can do it again sometime soon.
Love it. Would love it, yeah.
Very cool. Thank you, guys.
Take care.
Thank you.
Take care.
You bet.
Also wanted to throw this out real quick. If you go to drtompritchard.com, he's got you can check out his book. It's on Amazon. looks like a cool read. I haven't done a whole lot of research on it. And he's got an old school T-shirt, Wanted Dead or Alive. And if you order that, you can get an autographed photo of a very young Dr. Pritchard. So check out his site. It's very cool.
Also, read that that blog he was talking about when he was at a seminar or something. I read it the other day. It's pretty funny. So.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite interviews,
I think.
He's one of my favorite kind of guests, because there's the guests that you have to work to get an interview, and then there's the guys where you just let them go, and they know what the people want to hear. They know the stories to tell, and he made it very easy. That was a very easy interview and a great interview, and it's awesome that he stayed so long.
I know I had a bunch of questions I'd written down, and after we got to about 9 o'clock, and we're still talking about, Jerry Lawler and wrestling schools. So, I'm not going to get all these.
I had a few more, but like I say, it was a great interview, and it just leaves it open for another appearance down the road.
Yeah, definitely, it's fun.
But we got four minutes of live airfare, so let me throw off a plug here real quick. Everyone, check out our show at angrymarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at angrymarks.com, along with a lot of other shows like the Angry Mark Show and quite a few other ones. And so everyone, check out angrymarks.com. You can also check out blogtalkradio.com/Cotrere, and also blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo for older shows. And all the shows are all together on angrymarks.com on our page. So everyone check that out. So we got 3 minutes. So what do you guys want to talk about?
Well, what were you feeling on Monday night? I mean, Craig talked about it while you were trying to call Tom. So talk a little bit about Monday night when you were watching.
When I was watching, I was kind of like half paying attention. I was had the TV on. When I was playing Bojo 3 on the computer, and it took me, I didn't realize that Jerry stopped talking for a few minutes. It took me a little while to realize that something was off. And then it was like, then I'm thinking to myself, I'm trying to think the best possibility that, okay, he got in the ring, he wrestled, he might have got his blood pressure up a little. Maybe, best case scenario, he just got a little exuberant or whatever and just maybe passed out. You know, that's what I was hoping for. And then you hear the reports, and then it's like you hear what's really happening, and it was weird. It was weird watching a show with no commentary. It was weird watching it with no, with them going on. But I got to give John Cena credit, because as weird as it was and as half distracted as I was after finding out and wondering what was going on, I thought that was a fucking money promo that he cut under those circumstances. I mean, if that John Cena was there every week, the WWE would be doing a lot better business.
I also got to give it to Michael Cole, I think. I don't see how you could ever hate him again.
Michael Cole having to keep doing commentary while Jerry Lawler is having a heart attack right next to him and something over, I mean, that, you know, it's like, how can you dislike Michael Cole? I mean, the character might get a little annoying at times, but, I mean, as a person, I mean, there's somebody you have to have sympathy for is Michael Cole, because, I mean, the dude was under a lot of pressure and, in a very difficult situation, and I thought he did a fantastic job. I mean, I don't think you could do a better job.
I heard some people say, well, maybe it's an angle. When he was starting to do that, it's like, I don't know, I guess because I was watching when Owen died and I lived through that and all that stuff, and, you know, I knew immediately there wasn't any bullshit, like any angle or anything. It was real. It was one of those things, I guess.
I initially thought that maybe Jerry had a concussion or something like that. Maybe he got hurt in the match, and, you know, I was hearing little rumblings on the internet, half paying attention to the TV and then hearing whatever went down, and then just like Tom was talking about, you know, you go back and you rewatch it. It's like, oh my gosh. I mean, the last time something like this happened on live television, you know, we had a guy pass away in the ring. So So King is amazingly lucky, and as again, as Tom said, if he would have been anywhere else, he would not be around today.
Right, if he would have been out, like, walking to his mailbox to get the mail, he might not be alive today.
Yep. Yeah, to have those doctors on site and having people doing CPR on him so he is getting oxygen to his brain for the 20 minutes that he was clinically dead, I mean, that's unreal. So,
and I think, like, the WWE, like, Brian had talked about, like, they did check, like, his blood and other stuff, but they do it, like, once a year. Maybe when you get to, like, a certain age, they should make it mandatory where you got to do it, like, quarterly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I mean,
I'm not saying for everybody, because obviously you don't have to do it for, like, Daniel Bryan or, you know, Evan Bourne, these guys that are real young, but when you got guys like the King, JR, you know, or like just, you know, these Jerry Briscoe, Sergeant Slaughter, you know, all these older guys, you know, you they might not be in the ring taking bumps every week, but they still need they're still traveling, they're still, you know, under pressure, so they should, you know, make every effort to you know, accommodate their special needs.
Lawler's as active as anybody on the independent scene. I mean, even when it comes to, like, young guys or something like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was in Aruba, basically, before he went to Raw. So, I mean, you got to look at all the airfare, probably had something to do with this. I mean, he went from Aruba to Memphis to where the hell they were in Canada?
Montreal.
Montreal, yeah. But that's a lot of traveling. That's a lot of, like, air pressure is changing and stuff. So, I mean, you don't know how that affected him and stuff. So, it just might have been a weekend that was just a little too much. And at his age, you know, he can't, you know, it was just maybe a little too much for him. So hopefully he'll, like, chill out a little bit on that. But, you know, someone mentioned there's a Raw in Memphis in, like, 3 months, and that maybe Jerry will be back then.
I wish I'd seen back sooner, to be honest, the way he was looking.
I could see him on Raw next week, the way he was looking.
Somebody on Facebook made a tasteless joke, and I have to share it. He said Jerry Lawler needs to get out of the hospital because his girlfriend's got homecoming next month.
That's not that bad, Craig. I mean,
that's a Lawler-age joke. So who he dates is old.
Yeah.
It's like yelling Triple H about his wife.
All the power to Jerry for having a wife that's going to prom.
Who am I to judge?
I'm not 60 something, but I wish I was dating the prom queen.
If we lost,
you've dated many prom queens.
I was thinking on Monday, if he had passed away, he'd be like one of those. You know, I put him up there like with Ric Flair and Terry Funk level guys.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
As being, like, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. He'd been, I mean, some people that only watch WWE and have only watched WWE with him in it, they wouldn't know it, but, I mean, legitimately one of the greatest wrestlers. I put him in my top 10 of all time. I had to.
Absolutely. Just amazing performer. And you know, I saw him, you know, a couple of years ago wrestle in a casino. I say a couple of years ago. I can't even remember when Dr. Tom was in town. Probably 10 years ago, wrestling in a casino against Dusty Rhodes in front of like 40 fans, and they did nothing in the match, and it was one of the greatest matches I've ever seen.
One of the great things about him was he never really was a high-risk guy. He just it was like, it was all psychology with him, it seemed like. You know, when he wrestled, I mean,
totally.
He wasn't doing anything. I mean, he'd do the stupid stuff like, okay, you get hit by a car or roll down the steps in the Mid-South Coliseum or something like that. But the reason he was able to go for so long because he didn't do that big that style to, like, bang his body up.
I'll never forget the Kerry Von Erich match, because that's an example of storytelling in a match. Because the whole match is Lawler using a gimmick on Kerry, and I don't think he had a gimmick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, it was just his fist that, you know, he was balling up and everyone was going crazy. And then just the story that they told throughout that match. I mean, thanks to that match, I used to hate Jerry Lawler's guts, and I used to hate his guts for a long time. because this is back when I was still in high school, and my mom used to pay for all the pay-per-views that I used to watch, and I used to watch a lot of pay-per-views. Well, not as many as today, but all the pay-per-views back then. And my mom was a big Kerry Von Erich fan, and my mom was more pissed off at me at the end of that match where she was like, I'm never spending a fucking dime. Well, she didn't say fucking dime. But I'm never spending a dime on another pay-per-view for you. If you want to watch pay-per-view, you need to get a job and buy your own. And I had to get a freaking job at Wendy's to pay for my damn pay-per-view because of Jerry Lawler.
It was pretty boring.
Oh, goodness. That was an amazing match. That was
Lawler,
an amazing match.
Speaking of, you know, like Von Erich, you know, at least here in the United States, I think Lawler may be the biggest hometown star for so long.
Sure, sure.
I mean, it's been over 20, 25 years.
Yep. Yeah. I don't forget, I should go back and watch some of the matches on the Wrestling Gold Collection, because there's the one match where Rick Rude has his girlfriend, and it's probably the first ever man-on-woman violence where, you know, this I forgot what her name is. I just know she wore some tight-ass pants. She kind of interferes, and Jerry just, kind of grabs her, and he reaches back like he's going to cold-cock her in the face and just going absolutely apeshit, and then he fucking hits her. And she took a hell of a little bump for her, not having any experience, and that place went absolutely crazy. I mean, it was insane how much of a pop it was for him hitting a woman for the first time, you know.
Mm-hmm. I remember a spot he did with Buddy Landell in Memphis. This was, I think it was like 86. And the greatest selling, like delivering the punches and selling the punches I've ever seen, because he nailed like Buddy Landell with like 50 of them right in a row, and Buddy just sold him, like rocking his head right back and forth, back and forth. It's like one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
That's
one thing we didn't ask Dr. Tom about is he was involved with like a big spousal abuse kind of angle early on with Dirty White Boy.
That's right. I saw that on YouTube and the Dirty White Girl.
Yeah, we're the ball guys. I blame both of y'all.
Oh well. Anyway, White Girl came out and she's made it look like she was beaten up by the Dirty White Boy. She wanted Tom's help, and he told her, man, you have to go call a rape hotline or something like that on the video that I watched. And then it was just a swerve, and Tony Anthony beat him up and drug him around the arena with a noose around his neck.
Yeah. But I guess Katrina, do you have anything you want to talk about before we go?
No, nothing.
Craig, do you have anything you want to talk about before we go?
I think Dr. Tom said it all, man.
Okay. Well, Katrina, would you like to hear the story of how I got Future Endeavored on Facebook?
Sure.
Really? That's the extra content we're providing for people?
Extra content. Ed's personal life in this week.
It was requested on
that. What reminded me is we're talking about like the prom queen or whatever a minute ago is. After I posted, I was like, man, I think everyone's going to think I'm talking about Barb or something, but it's not Barb.
That's what I thought.
It's not Brian Alvarez. So what?
Who could blame him, though? Come on.
So basically, like this is okay. Remember when I went to Van Halen? And I went with this girl that I went to school with, and this girl was back in school. She was a head cheerleader. She was, like, the most popular girl in school. Still really good looking. Well, after I had asked her to Van Halen, she started dating some dude, and we went to Van Halen, and, you know, she's still with me. She actually lives with this dude now. Well, anyway, I kind of have one of my gimmicks on Facebook, is when any of my friends post a picture, I'll put, that looks great. You look very pretty. You look beautiful. Something like that. Well, my friend, she puts a poster of her at her son's football game, all football mom, you know, like soccer mom, but a football mom. And I made the comment that football moms aren't supposed to look so hot. Well, somehow this boyfriend decided all of a sudden it sent him into a rage, and he felt all super disrespected, and he made her unfriend me because I complimented his girlfriend, who I've known for like 30 years. The what?
Somebody on Facebook said you said something about her tits.
No, I didn't say anything about her tits, but...
Okay, that's just what somebody's comment. I was just asking.
See, I mean, she does have a nice rack, but I didn't actually say anything about it. I would always say cool stuff. I don't know what this is, but I think he's still pissed off about she went to Van Halen with me when she was with him or whatever, but it's like this dude is just... And then I could go on forever because this dude, before he dated her, dated this other friend of mine from high school, and he went all crazy and psycho and jealous on her and was like, had her scared where she's like hiding her gun before he comes over, and then she finally dumps him, and then he goes right to my other friend, and then everything that he did for the other girl, you see him doing for the chick on Facebook, so it's kind of like watching a horror movie just in slow motion on Facebook. And unfortunately, I feel bad for my friend because it's going to explode in her face, and I'm sure we'll be Facebook friends again, but I just think it's pretty sad. I mean, if you're gonna post photos on Facebook, be prepared to have people comment on them. And if you're gonna date somebody who posts photos on Facebook, be prepared to have to deal with people commenting on them. And you know, don't make your other like sacrifice friends you've had for 30 years because you're just a little fucking insecure about a simple fucking comment. You know,
right?
So, and I think the real lesson in this here is, if you're going to have Ed Laredo as a friend, you need to find that delete button. And when he makes a stupid comment, you just get rid of it and you move on with your life.
Or you need to learn how to tolerate
him. Absolutely.
What's funny is that we're at Van Halen, and apparently, like, one time I said something to another girl that we know, and her husband kind of, I don't think he got mad, but he kind of made a comment after mine. And she was telling me how her and her friends were making fun of him about that, and that they should know how Eddie is and this and that, and then here she is, you know, didn't stand up for me, just went ahead and hit the unfriend button and kind of hurt my feelings and disappointed me for a few days. Just because, you know, this is a real good friend of mine, at least I thought this was a good friend of mine, but, you know.
Oh, Facebook drama, so much fun.
I know, I love it. It's like being in high school all over again sometimes.
That's true.
But anyway, that's my future endeavored story. I know it's not as exciting as some people were hoping. I'm sure everybody was hoping that I was going to say that. Barbara finally told me to get the fuck out of her life, but unfortunately that didn't
exactly
happen.
What I thought. I thought that's who it was, just the way you were talking. But then I went down your friend list and saw she's still on there, so it wasn't her.
It's so funny because there's people I haven't been in contact for years from high school that were all, so who is it? Who is it? I was like, man, did I talk to you in 20 years? But yeah, it's so-and-so.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my little non-wrestling story for the week. So
that's,
I guess we're going to wrap up. Do we have any plans for next week?
Not yet. I'm still working on getting Miss Lila Lodge on the phone. Possibly next week. We've had a good run of guests as of late, so we might just have to... have a topic next week, and then get Miss Lodge on the week after. And working on a couple other guests, and had pretty darn good luck the last few weeks, so I don't want to jinx it.
Right. Okay. Everybody come back next week. We'll, like I said, we don't have a guest. We'll definitely have something to talk about. So everybody come back next week.
Be the man! You gotta beat the man! You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the man's good shit! Let's go hook him up!
Oh! Hands on
I want to drag you until I wear your Texas ass out. The game is off to play. And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.